Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. Say, are you a fixer-upper? Are you do-it-yourselfer? Are you good with an impact driver? Well, even if you're not, you might find it interesting. It's not a sure thing, but you might find this hour interesting. I always find this interesting. I couldn't tell you a difference between a spanner and a wrench, but when Darren Tracy is on, it's always interesting. He is a licensed professional engineer and construction specialist. He's ready to take your calls about your renovation, your home improvement, your maintenance projects. He's a licensed master plumber as well. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a question. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Darren Tracy, your home improvement calls coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today, and we welcome back Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. He is always a popular guest on this program. It's not a problem. It's a program. I don't know. We'll find out. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Oh, boy, it's time for a break. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, you got to bail me out of this. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing fine, Ray. Thank you.
Great to have you back here right before the big holiday. You know, we had a lady from the Berkshires who wrote us over 2 hours ago with a question. So I thought we would get this one done right away. You ready?
I'm ready.
Yeah, here we go. This is from Ann in Adams. Ann says, I have a Thermopride ferment. I swear to good God, I have not been drinking eggnog. I have a Thermopride furnace in my prefab home. Every now and then, a couple times a week, the temp will drop and furnace clicks on, but the blower doesn't, and the thermostat says it's called for heat. I turn the thermostat to off, then back on, and everything's okay after that. Is this a thermostat problem? I've had the guys out to look at it, but they never check the thermostat and say everything is fine. And that's from Ann in Adams.
Oh, that was a tongue twister, Ray.
Yeah.
It was. It does sound like a thermostat problem. Because she eliminated the problem once she reset the thermostat. I think she's correct, and that's a thermostat problem, and she could check that relatively easily with a replacement of a thermostat.
All right, this one came in, and I know we sent you this picture as well. This is from Aaron, also in Massachusetts, in Greenfield. Aaron says, there are several cracked and crumbling concrete blocks as part of the foundation of this garage. The cracks seem significant enough to be concerned about the integrity of the structure, especially since they are in the corners of the building. Unsure if the foundation was built below the frost line. The soil is heavy, not well drained. What can or should be done about this? And you see the picture here, some big cinder blocks, looks like, and there's some cracks there. What do you think?
Okay, I did see this, and it's interesting. I thought it was another email I had because it looks like a foundation problem that a client had sent me. These are concrete masonry units, colloquially called cinder blocks or masonry blocks. And the units in the photograph are old, and they may have, in fact, been made with cinders. Today, they're not made with cinders. They're made with cement and different sizes of aggregate. Mm-hmm. And they tend to hold up longer than the old-fashioned cinder blocks. But these are, for the listening audience that can't see these images, the blocks are crumbling. So they need to be replaced and or coated with a cementitious compound to protect them from future and additional delaminations and disintegrations and just falling apart.
Go ahead.
It does need some attention, and if the writer wants to contact me later for more details, more in-depth conversation, I can be available for that.
And what's your email address, Darren?
It's Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, at westbranchinc.com. But this could be tackled by a home improvement person that's somewhat handy. It's not rocket science, and there are individual blocks that can be replaced and patched. So it is something somebody could do who's relatively skilled on the homeowner end.
So not necessarily the end of the world, but it should be looked at.
Should be looked at, definitely. It's just going to get worse if attention is not paid to it. Like a lot of maintenance items, if you don't take care of the problems when they start to deteriorate, then it can be much worse down the road. And you know, that's one of the reasons I'm interested in maintenance. It's somewhat mundane, but it just saves a lot of work in the end, and then you have more time to go out skiing or walking, or in the summertime, hiking, more free time.
You doing any skiing?
I have not yet. I did have to put my snowshoes on to actually shovel out my deck door during the last snowfall dump. So I had that much outdoor recreation.
How much snow did you get?
We had 35 inches all day long up here in Greenfield outside of Saratoga. And that's really a lot. And I was concerned about roofs caving in, especially with some of the forecasts we saw last week, where we saw some precipitation forecast. And I'm thinking, oh, I hope we don't get another couple of feet of snow, because that could be really trouble for a lot of roofs.
Well, even worse, maybe to some extent, they are calling for a fair amount of rain Thursday night into Friday. And it occurs to me that in those places where it might only get a couple of degrees above freezing and there's still a couple of feet of snow on a roof, that could be a problem.
You know, on a pitched roof, it's not as much of a problem, you know, if equal amount of weight snow falls on it, because if it rains, at least some of the water is going to run off, and you're not going to have that weight on the roof. For a flat roof, it could be a problem. A flat roof that has a roof drain, say, in the middle of the roof, because all that snow there with some rain, it turns slushy and it plugs the drain, and it creates a pond on the roof.
Our number here, by the way, if you have a question for Darren Tracy, is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Home improvement and maintenance today. Nancy in Wilton, you're first. Hello.
Hey, hold on. Let me get my speech. We have a particular problem that keeps occurring. We have a shallow well driven point, and my husband is a builder. He built our house. He's pretty good at most everything except plumbing, and he'll say that himself. We have several filters, two under the house that are the main filters that try to take out some of this incredibly hard mineral content from getting into the house. Plugs up once a month, change the filters. Our problem is that as soon as he changes those filters, we get a lot of air. That's what I'm calling it, air in the line. So when you open the faucet, whether it's the kitchen, the bathroom, the shower, it doesn't matter, it spurts really violent, you know, and then there's all this, and then it spurts, and then more water will come out. And the last time I did it, I called the plumber, and wouldn't you know, about the time I called him, it stopped.
Ah, yes. And?
Okay.
Oh, that's
so
it.
The problem
so
is.
I'm wondering what it. Well, the problem is we're not getting. You know, it takes a long time to fill up the sink of water.
Yeah.
We're just spitting air. Is there something that we can do?
Yeah, let me just take a moment to explain what a well point is for the listeners that don't understand what a well point is. They're pretty interesting. In areas where there's not municipal water, and there is a relatively high water table. For a source of water, you can utilize what's called a well point. Basically, it's a pointed piece of steel driven into the ground, and it has a screen, a perforated screen, just above the point. So you drive that pipe into the ground, say 10 or 15 feet, not real deep, down to the water table, and you connect onto that with piping, and you can utilize that as your water source, as opposed to a drilled well. The reasons that you are getting water mixed with air, it could be pulling in just air from the soil. Usually well points are in sandy soil, so it could be pulling in some air with water, have pockets of air. That's one possibility. You could have leakage in your piping, on your suction side of your piping. That's another possibility. If it leaked terribly, then you'd lose your prime and you wouldn't have any water at all. But I'm thinking that there might be just air getting into the water source, the point through your soil would be my best guess. And maybe some of the other callers might have some ideas after listening to this.
That's a
good
fair
luck with that, Nancy,
thanks a lot. We'll take a quick break. Our guest today is Darren Tracy. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement. Vox Pop is the show, don't you know? 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. Some soft romantic music for a home repair program. Well, why not? It's the end of the world. 800-348-2551 is the number. Darren Tracy is our guest. Oscar is in Bethel. Oscar, you're on.
Hello. I have a ranch house that was built in the late 50s. It's on a cinder block foundation with a nice big crack in it that takes on water. So I'm looking for the options to make that repair to that damage.
Hi, Oscar. The best way to repair a leaking foundation is from the positive side, which is the exterior of the building, not the negative side. It's really difficult to plug a leaking foundation wall from the interior side. It's possible. There are products out there, epoxy injection, expanding polyurethane injection, but the most successful method of stopping water to come in from the exterior is to excavate around the exterior of the building, and then you could waterproof that crack. You could patch it with a masonry product, and then you could coat it with a elastomeric waterproofer, and that would be my best approach to solving that problem.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today, and Matthew is in West Charlton. Matthew.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm in the process of installing a septic tank riser access cover. My question is about fastening the cover to the septic tank. So it's a concrete septic tank. My intention was to get a quarter-inch masonry bit and drill into the septic tank and get, you know, quarter-inch anchor bolts to feed into those holes. My question is actually about drilling the masonry or drilling the concrete. Could I get away with a typical drill driver that has the hammer feature, or do I need something a little bit more heavy-duty to actually get through the concrete?
Hey, Matthew, it's a really good idea to install that extension on a septic tank, and you can, once that's installed, you can put a lockable lid on there and have access to the septic tank for easy pumping and inspections. Yes, you can use a hammer drill, and that's the preferred method of attaching those risers to the septic tank. And usually, depending upon the size of the concrete anchor that you use, typically we use what are called tapcons or concrete fastener screws that screw right into the concrete. In order for them to screw into the concrete, you need to pre-drill the concrete. And concrete doesn't drill very easily with a standard rotational drill, so you need to drill that with a hammer drill. And you'd use like a 5/16 type or size diameter bit for masonry screw, often called a TAPCON, as I stated. And before you put that riser down, take a bead of sealant, urethane or silicone, and put that on the bottom of your riser or on the concrete, and then set that down in that bed of sealant, and that keeps water out. But yeah, you can go ahead with a hammer drill, and it's a fairly easy job.
Matthew, thank you very much for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Ellen in Schenectady. Ellen, you're up.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay.
My problem is I own a ranch house. It has two-zone heating, and the heat on the zone that controls the whole front run of the house is just fine in terms of it's hot water and gas. But the backside is just cool. And I had someone in to look at it. They were able to adjust, it was a quick trip. They were able to adjust it so it wasn't just, you know, really feeling cold, but it isn't anywhere near as warm and comfortable as the whole front run of the house. And I'm just wondering what may be the problem. The furnace is fairly new, so it's not a question of an old furnace.
Okay, Ellen, is this a recent problem or has this been happening for a long time?
That's a good question, Darren. I haven't really, you know, I would guess it's sort of more recent. I don't think it was like this all the time.
Okay. So Ellen has a natural gas-fired hot water boiler. A boiler heats water and circulates the water around the house to radiators or baseboard heaters. And
right.
the zones, Ellen said that she has two zones. The zones are controlled either by a circulator, which circulates the water around to different zones, or a control valves, which you have one control valve per zone. So you might have a control valve that is hanging up and not opening all the way, or you might have a circulator that's not operating to its maximum efficiency on that one particular zone. I am thinking that you might be under-radiated. You might have to install another segment of baseboard heater in that one zone that is not heating to your satisfaction. So, you know, two things to look at, and if the zone valve is not the problem and the circulator is not the problem, then you have to add more baseboard radiation, or if you have radiators, another radiator.
Ellen, thank you very much for the call. Our guest today is Darren Tracy. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. And Darren, we got an email from someone who might or might not be a relative of yours. I won't say this person's first name, but it shares your last name. And this person writes, you mentioned that home maintenance is one of the most important things you can do to set yourself up for success and prevent major damage. What are your top three maintenance items for the everyday homeowner?
Yeah, as you're reading that question, I'm trying to think who would be.
Well, I'll tell you after the show.
Okay. All right. Oh, God, my list is a mile long. My wife would tell you I've got lists upon lists upon lists. And it depends upon the season. In the winter, I posted on my Facebook page and my LinkedIn page that we had so much snow this past storm that it's important to shovel the peak of your roof, because your roof cannot breathe because the ridge vent is covered with that snow. Now, you'd only do that if you have a relatively easy roof to access and you're able to do that. If not, you would hire a professional to do that. So when you get a big snowstorm, keeping your ridge vent clear. Drainage around the perimeter of your house. We've had a lot of calls on wet basements, Ray, the show in the past.
Oh, yeah.
You want the grade to pitch away from your house. So that might be the single most important maintenance item that I could recommend any season. Make sure that the grade pitches away from your house.
Okay.
And I would put that notice out to architects too. they design buildings, and the grade is established, so it's just not quite high enough because the landscaper comes along and adds some mulch, and the water drips off the roof. The mulch acts like a dam, and then the water can't get away from the foundation.
Yeah.
So grading away from the foundation. One more. Maintenance items will be a safety item, smoke alarms, carbon monoxide detector. Make sure that the batteries are up to date and you have them where they should be. And the rules on the placement have changed over the years. The latest code requires more carbon monoxide detectors than the code last year or years ago. So those are the three answers.
You know, I would add to that last bit of advice about smoke detectors. Always read the instructions. My wife and I were putting up new smoke detectors last week, and I bought them. They were a very reputable name brand, and we were putting one up, and I said, oh, gosh, we can't get this thing to go on. Where do the batteries go? So, she said, you got to turn it on. We turned it on, and then I turned it off, and then we saw in the instructions, if you turn this off, it's permanently disabled, and you must dispose of it.
So, really?
Yes. It's one of those that has a built-in battery of some kind.
Oh, the 10-year battery?
Yes, money down the drain. I was a very popular man. Let's go back to the phones. Jim in Waltham, Mass. Jim, you're up. Hello, Jim. How you doing, baby? Goodbye, Jim. And Denise in Newburgh. Denise, you're on.
Hi. I recently bought a beautiful old home, 1840. And I love this home, except I just discovered that I have a leaky roof. The home was advertised as a new roof. Well, there is a new roof on part of it, but not the part over my bedroom where I have two buckets now collecting water.
Yeah.
And we have a forecast. So I had a contract come out. And the price was quite high because I was trying to look up now the exact materials, but it's a rubberized surface that they have to put on there, and they have to do a lot of special things. So I just wanted your opinion. Is this accurate that, I checked with a couple of my handymen. They don't do flat roofs. They like pitch roofs with shingles. This is not what we're talking about here, though.
That's fine.
Does that sound reasonable to you? I just want to, I don't know much.
Well, I don't know what the price is, and I don't know the size of the roof, so I don't know what would be reasonable,
right.
Denise.
Yeah.
But I would tell you that rubber roofs, flat roofs, also called EPDM roofs, are typically more expensive than asphalt shingles. Could be in the neighborhood of, depending upon the roof, $5 to $8 a square foot. Depending on tear off. So if you,
square foot house. Yeah.
Okay. And, so how does that math work out for you?
Yeah. Well, I think
2,600, that would be 13,000 at $5 a square foot.
Right. That's about what it is. So I think I'm going to go ahead with this because we have a forecast coming. He's going to have people shovel off the snow and tarp it for me till we can get it. But He seemed very reputable, and I read the reviews, of course, so I think I'm going to go ahead with it, but I just wanted to run it by somebody like you first, so I appreciate
Denise, contact me after the show, because you said that was a relatively new roof, so it doesn't make sense that you would need to replace it.
No.
You can give me some more details,
it's not
a new roof?
Okay.
Denise?
This part. No, when I bought the house, the realtors, all the descriptions said new roof. And there is a section with a new roof, a peaked shingled roof. But this guy said to me, this is not a new roof.
This is an old roof.
Okay. Make sure you bring that complaint to the real estate show, which I'm sure is coming up in a couple of weeks. Denise, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. Let's go to Jonathan in Del Mar. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello. My question is, I have a shower that the base of the shower and some of the tile has a between a teal green and light green coating in places. This is something that's occurred within the last year. Somebody told me it was copper leaching out of the copper pipes. I've tried all kinds of things to get rid of it. I can find nothing that will do it. And if it's copper leaking out of the pipes, that's a whole nother issue. So do you have any idea what it might be?
I really don't, Jonathan. That's that's, you know, something I haven't heard of before, copper leaching out or anything leaching out into the pan of a shower. You know what? As I'm speaking, I just had an idea. Now, that may have been flashed. The shower may have been flashed with a copper material, and water is getting in there somehow, and then the copper is leaching out. And then when copper does leach out, it does have that green patina like you'd see on a copper roof. So, you know, that would be my best guess, is that copper flashing was used, not copper from your pipes, because if it's leaking that much, you would see water problems elsewhere. You would notice that in other places. So that's my best guess. It's copper flashing and it's leaching out. And I keep an eye on that to see if water is getting by the copper. If it's not getting by the copper, you know, it's not a big deal. You could try something like a copper cleaner, like Brasso. Try that and see if that takes care of the problem.
All right. What is, when you say copper flashing, where would I look for that? Where is that?
Well, that would be embedded as part of the construction, and that would be invisible. You said you had a shower, and, you know, sometimes showers are prefabricated fiberglass, one-piece units. You wouldn't have that.
No,
sometimes showers are built.
Pie.
Yeah, built from scratch, and when they're built from scratch, you need to utilize flashings. And if it's old enough, I suppose they could have used copper flashings. So, you know, the more I talk about this and the more I think about it, that's probably what's going on, is just getting water that's touching the copper and then weeping out, and that's why you see that green patina. It's just some of the copper itself that oxidizes to that green color.
But Brasso may fix it, or
well,
you know, the
Brasso may clean it up, and, you know, unless you're seeing water underneath. Is this on the first floor or second floor?
Second floor, and there doesn't seem to be any leaking.
Okay, then I wouldn't worry about it until you get a leak, and if you don't like the looks of it, I would try a copper cleaner like Brasso.
All right, Jonathan, hey, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. The number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today on the program. Let's grab one more before our next break. Linda is in Clifton Park. Hello, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So my question is about hot water. The water going to all of the faucets in my house takes forever to get to the hot water to get to the faucet. And some people have told me that it just depends on where your hot water heater is and how far away it is from the faucet, but it doesn't matter which faucet it is in the house. One, my bathroom is practically above the hot water heater. And, you know, I can go water some plants and come back 5 minutes later and the water is just starting to get warm. So I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to make that faster.
Linda, yes, I think I know what the problem is there. Your hot water heater typically would have two heating elements. So it sounds like one of the heating elements is no longer working. So it takes all that water to pump out before the warm water in the tank from which is surrounding the other heating element, it gets fed into the pipes into whichever faucet that you are using. So I would have a plumber check the heating elements in the hot water tank, and it's a relatively easy fix as long as the access nut is removable and not seized up, and not a real expensive fix either.
Oh, great. That's good news. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're
very
welcome.
Much. Let's take a quick break, Darren. Darren Tracy's our guest today. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. And we have many more calls to go. We'll open the email bag in a moment. 800-348-2551. Thank you. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. Darren Tracy is our guest. And Darren, a whole slew of emails. This one is from Alex. Alex says, my garage floor is probably 60 years old. It's poured slab on grade. It's cracked and pitted and settled on different angles. Is there a way I can re-pour a new slab over the old that is reinforced with steel mesh, or do I need to tear up the old slab and start new? Do you know of any other alternatives? And that's from Alex.
Alex, probably you would not be able to pour a slab thick enough to install a reinforcing mesh in it because it would screw up your grades. Probably the best bet is to jackhammer the old slab out and pour new. I know it sounds like a lot of work, but if you get in there with the right tools, the crew with a couple of jackhammers, it comes out relatively quickly. And then you'd want to put a poly vapor barrier down. Make sure you put a poly vapor barrier down before you pour the new slab. It's really important. Alternatively, you could put if you had the right elevations, you could put a self-leveling concrete underlayment on top of your slab, and that might work out for you, but typically you wouldn't get a really good bond and it would fail after a couple of years. So I would suggest bite the bullet, jackhammer the old one out, and put a new one in.
Okay, this one from Norm in Albany. The recent snow slid off my slate roof yesterday, took out part of my gutters. Should I have them put up again, or should I just forget about using gutters with a slate roof? And that is from Norm in Albany.
Well, snow has a tendency to slide off slate, so I would probably not reinstall the gutters. I'm a gutter proponent if they're maintained, but if they're not maintained, I'm not for gutters because they can cause more problems than they can solve. And then with the slate, because as you mentioned, what's the name of this caller, right?
Oh, gosh. Let's just call him Jimmy. Hang on a minute. Norm. It's Norm.
Norm.
Yeah.
As Norm said, the snow slid off. Because of the slate being slippery, the surface is not, coefficient of friction on slate is not as high as it is on asphalt shingles, so it tends to slide right off. Probably happen again, so I wouldn't put them up. But what I would do is make sure your grade around your foundation is pitched away from your house, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, because without the gutters, your water is going to hang around your foundation unless the grade is pitched away. Good luck with that, Norm.
All right. This one is from Eileen in the eastern edge of Western Massachusetts. Eileen writes, my husband and I bought our first time home this past summer. The garage door opener needs to be adjusted. It's forced to engage the reverse is really heavy. The question is, how do we adjust it? All my Googling skills are being challenged. It's a McAllister Type 2A installed in the early 1990s. She sent a picture. It's a beautiful garage door opener. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not really following that. Is that an automatic opener?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's an electric. It's one of the Allister Type 2As.
Okay, and it's not opening easily?
They usually
open or they don't open.
It says the force when it is in reverse is really heavy. So it must really come down like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. She could check to make sure the springs are, both springs are connected.
Oh, that's a good idea.
There are springs on each side of the track of a garage door that help you with gravity and pull up on the door. And sometimes one will become disattached or it will come loose from being attached, and then the door will be heavier, and that would be heavier on your motor that's raising and lowering the door. So check that.
That makes sense. Okay, this one is last email, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Mary. Mary says, I have a 4-year-old high-efficiency combination gas boiler. Two heating zones are not heating separately. I've had no success with installing a plumber. Know how you install a plumber. Two professionals agree that supply and return pipes coming off the system are too closely connected, 2.5 inches, and one professional said circulators should have check valves. Am I looking at a major plumbing expense?
That's a relative. cost is relative.
Indeed.
But if you've got to get into cutting into the piping, you're talking about hundreds of dollars instead of tens of dollars. But that could be it, or it could be. I'm not sure really. I'd need more details about that particular problem.
Okay. Let's jump back to the phones here for the home stretch on Vox Pop 800-348-2551. Corey in Averill Park. Corey, you're on.
So, sorry, I was shoveling out the snow from around my house so my basement doesn't flood.
Ah.
I lost my breath for a second. the question.
That's great.
My question is I'm working on looking at putting it. This is more of an installation than a maintenance. Looking at installing a deck on a fairly steep slope, and I believe that rock is pretty close to the surface. And I want to attach the rebar into the grout, into the rock. My question is, since it may be more than 8 feet below grade, do they have some sort of a standard construction piece of equipment or hardware that can drill down to the rock and attach into it, similar to like a concrete anchor bolt where you put something in it, say like half inch, turn a nut, and then it would expand and then give some certain length where you could pour a concrete pier onto it and tie that into the rebar in the pier.
Okay, I'm not totally tracking you. Why would you want to dig down 8 feet below grade? You said 8 feet.
Well,
why would you want to go that deep?
So I'm so I'm kind of like putting something together for a contractor. I'm anticipating that we would encounter rock at less than 8 feet below grade. If it's more than 8 feet below grade, then we're going to have to figure out some other option. And that other option I'm thinking would be to bore down to whatever rock elevation is. And then since I want to attach this deck to the rock, and not have it not have the piers resting on the slope, on a steep slope, is there any way to grout something in or have like an anchor bolt in the rock?
Okay, I'm tracking you now. Just for the listeners, an alternative to installing the deck posts on rock would be to install them on a spread footing, which could be like a 2 foot square or 3 foot square footing that would support the deck. But the caller wants to have the deck supported by rock, so he wants to go down deeper to the rock. You could auger down if you had a tractor or a bobcat with an auger, maybe 8 or 10 inch diameter, and if you're in a heavier type soil that will support itself, like clay, you could pull the auger out after he's augered out to the depth of the rock, and then you could fairly quickly install a form, often called sonotube forms or cardboard forms, and that would keep the dirt from falling in. And then you could use long drill bits, extensions, and drill down into your rock with a long drill bit extension. A little difficult to do for that depth. I'm not sure that you would need the rebar drilled into the rock. It would be nice to have, but if you've got a rough rock surface, the concrete could lock into the rock itself, and you wouldn't need that rebar. So I guess those are my comments on that subject.
Corey, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy joins us today. Richard is in Greenfield. Richard, you're on.
Hi. I have a water diversion situation. I have a house that's 2.5 stories. House was built in 1900. It has a 12-12 pitch slate roof. At one time when I bought the house, I think there was gutters on it. I didn't want to put gutters on it. So around the house, I poured a concrete apron with a pitch on it so that when the water comes off the roof, It hits the concrete and gets away from the foundation. So I'm on one last section of the house after 30, 40 years has gone by. And one section on the eave end, I don't want to put concrete because underneath where the apron would have been, there is a sewer pipe that goes around the side of the house. So instead of using a concrete apron and having a pitch away from the house so that the water, when it hits it, will divert away from it, could I use some sort of I'm looking for an answer to see if maybe I could have some crushed rock with something underneath there to catch the water and divert it away from the house so that if I did at some point, hopefully I don't, that I'd have to dig down to the sewer, right. Sewer line right. That's coming out of the house.
I think the idea that you have is a good solution. And what you would put down underneath your crushed rock would be polyethylene vapor barrier, 6 mil, and I'd probably double that up, 2 layers of 6 mil, and make sure your subgrade is pitched away before you put that vapor barrier down, and then put your crushed stone or naturally rounded stone on top of that as an apron. And the concrete apron idea that you said you had for 30, 40 years is, you know, I've seen that quite a bit, and it works out well. Sometimes the concrete cracks, and you need to caulk that and seal that up. It may not be the most attractive landscape architectural feature, but it's functional. The other idea you had with the crushed stone acting as an apron, that would work well too.
Richard, thank you very much for the call, and we go to Chris in Niskayuna. Hello, Chris.
How you doing? Thanks Good. For taking my call. I think we may have made a mistake many years ago when we did some damage repair on our house. And considering we've got some renovations coming up, I wanted to see if there's something we can do going forward. The problem is when we re-sided our house to take care of a bunch of rot problems, we put 1-inch foil face polyiso all around the house, taped the seams, sealed everything up really good. But inside the house, also on the inside, we've got polyethylene sheeting behind the drywall in all the rooms. And I'm afraid now that we've created a sealed cavity in there, and I'm worried about moisture driving the walls and condensation and looking to figure out what the best course of action moving forward would be.
Have you seen any moisture problems in your house?
No, I mean, we haven't seen anything since then. That was probably 8 years ago in that neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you may not have a problem. I think you may not. The vapor barrier on the inside will minimize the tendency for moisture to drive through the wall in the winter and condense. And so it's not getting into the cavity due to that vapor barrier. And then if it does, whatever moisture does get in that cavity, it's going to be at a higher dew point than the temperature is going to be at a higher dew point. So you're not going to get any condensation until you get out to your outer layer of rigid insulation. And then your dew point would probably occur in the outer layer of 1-inch thick rigid insulation, but it can't condense with inside that rigid insulation. So I don't think that you're going to have a problem. I understand where you think you might have a problem because you've got a vapor barrier on the outside and a vapor barrier on the inside. If I was starting from scratch, I wouldn't put the polyethylene vapor barrier on the inside. But I really like the idea of the insulation on the outside of the house as far out as possible, that rigid insulation. That's a really good, effective solution. And it keeps your wall cavity warm.
Yeah, we only did 1 inch is what I was concerned about. And, you know, what I've been reading is that 2 inches or more in our climate zone would be what's required to keep condensation from forming in the walls. And then with the renovations we're going to be doing, we will have some walls open. So the question is, should we leave the polyliner off before we close them back up or put it back up if they're going to be open anyway?
Yes, I would leave that off, as I mentioned. You know, so that the idea behind leaving it off is that you could get some drying to the inside, and also the latex paint acts as a vapor retarder. So I would leave the vapor barrier off on the inside, and I'm not sure that you're going to have condensation problems inside your walls. Do you have bat insulation inside your walls?
We lost them there, Darren. So we only have exactly 2 minutes here. Let's grab another caller, and Barbara has been waiting for a half an hour in Saratoga. Barbara, let's take your call here in the last minute and 45.
Okay, thank you. So I need your expert advice. We have an old house in downtown Saratoga Springs, and since 2011, every two or three years, we've had to bring the plumber in to snake the where water leaves the house out into the street because roots have clogged it up. And the last time we had it done was 2 years ago. Now, last week, it started making the pre-warning signs like glug, 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 and a little bit of water backed up into the downstairs bathtub. Now the water seems to be draining. So my question for the short term, should I be having the plumber come to do that rooting again for the to clean the roots out of that drain before it becomes a problem? And what's my long-term fix for something like that?
No, I wouldn't have him come until it... Okay. I would not have him come until it was a problem. Because you might be wasting your money. And then the long-term fix might need to be a more short-term fix. You might need to do that sooner rather than later. And that is replace that piping that goes from your house to the sewer main. And I've had to do that myself in some of these older houses. Tree roots will get in a small little crack in the pipe and then clog up the lines, and you're going to continuously have that problem. So you have to replace the whole line.
All right, Barbara, that's where we will have to leave it. Darren Tracy, thank you so much for being here today, sir.
You're welcome.
Have a great holiday season, and we'll talk to you in 2021, all right?
Okay, very good.
Thanks a lot. Support comes from Curtis Lumber, featuring Valspar Interior and Exterior Paints, Cabot Stains, and more at 22 locations in New York and Northern Vermont, curtislumber.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Specializing in distinctive eyewear, European styling, and prescription and non-prescription sunglasses, eye exams by appointment, EYEDENTITY, eyewearalbany.com. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Thanks to Darren Tracy for being here today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Tina Rennick took the calls. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Apologies to all those we didn't get to today. We'll have Darren back soon in 2021. Hey, listen, no show tomorrow. It's Christmas Eve. No show the day after that. That's Christmas Day. We'll be back on Monday. If you're celebrating any holiday this coming week or two, spread some joy. Take some joy, and we'll see you on Monday. Right now, stand by for 51%.